6.
Got a lunks,
the little girl said. She was grimy, with hands that probably hadn't been washed since she'd gotten old enough to pick her own nose. She was missing a lot of teeth, too many for her age.
The marm, she got a lunks good.
Got a lunks for smalls?
Got a lunks for smalls,
the girl said to Lift, nodding.
But got a snaps, too. Big a stone, that one, and eyes is swords. Don't like a smalls, but got a lunks for them. Real noggin in that.
Maybe for outsider cares?
Lift said.
Like a the outsider? They got a light for her? Ifn't she given lunks for smalls?
Maybe,
the girl said.
Maybe that right. But it might be noggin in, but it's rack, too. I say that, real rack.
Thanks,
Lift said.
Here.
She gave the girl her handkerchief, as promised, in trade for the information. The girl wrapped it around her head and gave Lift a gap-toothed grin. People liked trading information in Tashik. It was kind of their thing. The grimy little girl paused.
That lighter above? The lunks from the sky? I heard Loudon about it. That was you outside, eh?
Yeah.
The girl turned as if to leave, but then reconsidered and put a hand on Lift's arm.
You,
the girl said to Lift.
Outsider?
Yeah.
You listening?
I'm listening.
People, they don't listen.
She smiled at Lift again, then finally scuttled away. Lift settled back on her haunches in the alleyway across from some communal ovens, a vast, hollowed-out cavern in the wall, with huge chimneys cut upward. They burned the rock-bud husks from the farms, and anyone could come cook in the central ovens there. They couldn't have fires in their own places. From what Lift had heard, early in the city's life, they'd had a fire blaze through the various slums and killed tons of people. In the alleys, you didn't see smoke trails, only the occasional pinprick of sphere light. It was supposed to be the weeping, and most spheres had gone done. Only those who had spheres out by luck during that unexpected high storm a few days ago would have light.
Mistress, Windle said. That was the strangest conversation I've ever heard, and I once grew an entire garden for some keenspren.
Seemed normal to me. Just a kid on the street.
But the way you talked, Windle said.
What way?
With all those odd words and terms. How did you know what to say?
It just felt right, Lift said. Words is words. Anyway, she said that we could get food at the Tashi's Light Orphanage. Same as the other one we talked to.
Then why haven't we gone there?
Windle asked.
Nobody likes the woman who runs it. They don't trust her. Say that she's starvin' mean. That she only gives away food in the first place because she wants to look good for the officials that watch the place.
To turn your phrase back at you, mistress, food is food.
Yeah,
Lift said.
It's just... What's the challenge of eating a lunch someone gives you?
I'm certain you will survive the indignity, mistress.
Unfortunately, he was right. She was too hungry to produce any awesomeness, which meant being a regular child beggar. She didn't move, though. Not yet.
People, they don't listen.
Did Lift listen? She did usually, didn't she? Why did the little urchin girl care, anyway? Hands in pockets, Lift rose and picked her way through the crowded slot street, dodging the occasional hand that tried to swat or punch her. People here did something strange. They kept their spheres in rows, strung on long strings, even if they put them in pouches. And all the money she saw had holes in the bottoms of the glass spheres, So you could do that. What if you had to count out exact change? Would you unstring the whole starvin' bunch, then string them up again? At least they used spheres. People farther toward the west, they just used chips of gemstone, sometimes embedded in hunks of glass, sometimes not. Starvin' easy to lose, those were. People got so mad when she lost spheres. They were strange about money. Far too concerned with something that you couldn't eat. Though Lift figured that was probably the point of using spheres instead of something rational, like bags of food. If you actually traded food, everyone would eat up all their money and then where would society be? The Tashi's Light Orphanage was a corner building, cut into a place where two streets met. The main face pointed onto the large thoroughfare of the immigrant quarter and was painted bright orange. The other side faced a particularly wide alleyway mouth that had some rows of seats cut into the sides, making a half circle like some kind of theater, though it was broken in the center for the alleyway. That strung out into the distance, but it didn't look quite as derelict as some others. Some of the shanties even had doors, and the belching that echoed from within it sounded almost refined. She'd been told by the urchins not to approach from the street side, which was for officials and real people. Urchins were to approach from the alleyway side, so Lift neared the stone benches of the little amphitheater where some old people in shikwas were sitting, and knocked on the door. A section of the stone above it was carved and painted gold and red, though she couldn't read the letters. A youth pulled open the door. He had a flat, wide face, like Lift had learned to associate with people who weren't born quite the same as other folk. He looked her over, then pointed at the benches. "Sit there," he said. "Food comes later." "How much later?" Lift said, hands on hips. "Why? You got appointments?" the young man asked, then smiled. "Sit there. Food comes later." She sighed, but settled down near where the old people were chatting. She got the impression that they were people from farther in the slum who came out here, to the open circle cut into the mouth of the alleyway, where there were steps to sit on, and a breeze. With the sun getting closer to setting, the slots were falling deeper and deeper into shadow. There wouldn't be many spheres to light it up at night. People would probably go to bed earlier than they normally did, as was common during the weeping. Lift huddled on one of the seats, Windle writhing up beside her. She stared at the stupid door to the stupid orphanage, her stupid stomach growling.
"What was wrong with that young man who answered the door?" Windle asked.
"Dunno," Lift said. "Some people are just born like that." She waited on the steps, listening to some Tashiki men from the slums chat and chuckle together. Eventually a figure skulked into the mouth of the alleyway. It seemed to be a woman, wrapped all in dark cloth. Not a true shikwa. Maybe a foreigner trying to wear one and hide who she was. The woman sniffled audibly, holding the hand of a large child, maybe 10 or 11 years old. She led him to the doorstep of the orphanage, then pulled him into a hug. The boy stared ahead, sightless, drooling. He had a scar on his head, healed mostly, but still an angry red. The woman bowed her head, then her back, and slunk away, leaving the boy. He just sat there, staring. Not a baby in a basket. No, that was a children's tale. This was what actually happened at orphanages, in Lift's experience. People left children who were too big to keep caring for, but couldn't take care of themselves or contribute to the family.
"Did she just leave that boy?" Windle asked, horrified.
"She's probably got other children," Lift said softly. "She can barely keep fed. She can't spend all her time looking after one like that." Not any longer. Lift's heart twisted inside of her, and she wanted to look away, but couldn't. Instead, she stood up and walked over toward the boy. Rich people, like the viziers in Azir, had a strange perspective on orphanages. They imagined them full of saintly little children, plucky and good-hearted, eager to work and have a family. In Lift's experience, though, orphanages had far more like this boy. Kids who were tough to care for. Kids who required constant supervision. Or who were confused in the head. Or those who could get violent. She hated how people made up this rich person's romantic dream of what an orphanage should be like. Perfect, full of sweet smiles and happy singing, not full of frustration, pain, or confusion. She sat down next to the boy. She was smaller than he was. "Hey," she said. He looked to her with glazed eyes. She could see his wound better now. The hair hadn't grown back on the side of his head. "It's going to be all right," she said, taking his hand in hers. He didn't reply. A short time later, the door into the orphanage opened, revealing a shriveled-up weed of a woman. Seriously, she looked like the child of a broom and a particularly determined clump of moss. Her skin drooped off her bones like something you'd hack up after catching crud in the slums. And she had spindly fingers that Lift figured might be twigs she'd glued in place after her real ones fell off. The woman put hands on hips, amazingly didn't break any bones in the motion, and looked the two of them over.
"An idiot and an opportunist," she said.
"Hey," Lift said, scrambling up. "He's not an idiot. He's just hurt."
"I was describing you, child," the woman said, then knelt beside the boy with the hurt head.
She clicked her tongue.
"Worthless, worthless," she muttered. "I can see through your deception. You won't last long here. Watch and see."
She gestured backward, and the young man Lift had seen earlier came out and took the hurt boy by the arm, leading him into the orphanage. Lift tried to follow, but Twigs for Hands stepped in front of her.
"You can have 3 meals, the woman told her. "You pick when you want them, but after 3, you're done. Consider yourself lucky I'm willing to give anything to one like you."
"What's that supposed to mean?" Lift demanded.
"That if you don't want rats on your ship, you shouldn't be in the business of feeding them."
The woman shook her head, then moved to pull the door shut.
"Wait," Lift said.
"I need somewhere to sleep."
"Then you came to the right place."
"Really?"
"Yes. Those benches usually clear out once it gets dark."
"Stone benches?" Lift said. "You want me to sleep on stone benches?"
"Oh, don't whine. It's not even raining any longer."
The woman shut the door. Lift sighed, looking toward Windle. A moment later, the young man from before opened the door and tossed something out to her. A large baked roll of clemma bread, thick and granular, with spicy paste at the center.
"Don't suppose you have a pancake?" Lift asked him. "I've got a goal to eat."
He shut the door. Lift sighed, but settled down on the stone benches near some old men and started gobbling it up. It wasn't particularly good, but it was warm and filling.
"Storming witch," she muttered. "Don't judge her too harshly, child," said one of the old men on the benches.
He wore a black shikwa, but had pulled back the part that wrapped the face, exposing a gray mustache and eyebrows. He had dark brown skin with a wide smile.
"It is difficult to be the one that handles everyone else's problems."
"She doesn't have to be so mean."
"When she isn't, then children congregate here begging for handouts."
"So? Isn't that kind of the point of an orphanage?"
Lift chewed on the roll.
"Sleep on the rock benches?
I should go steal her pillow.
I think you'd find her ready to deal with feisty urchin thieves.
She ain't never faced me before. I'm awesome. She looked down at the rest of her food. Of course, if she used her awesomeness, she'd just end up hungry again. The man laughed.
They call her the Stump, because she won't be blown by any storm. I don't think you'll get the best of her, little one.
He leaned in.
But I have information, if you are interested in a trade.
Tashiki and their secrets. Lift rolled her eyes. Ain't got nothing left to trade.
Trade me your time, then. I will tell you how to get on the Stump's good side. Maybe earn yourself a bed. In turn, you answer a question for me. Is this a deal?
Lift cocked an eyebrow at him. Sure, whatever.
Here is my secret. The Stump has a little hobby. She is in the business of trading spheres. An exchanging business, so to speak. Find someone who wants to trade with her and she will handsomely reward you.
Trade spheres? Lift said. Money for money? What is the point of that? He shrugged.
She works hard to cover it up, so it must be important.
What a lame secret, Lift said. She popped the last of the roll into her mouth, the clemma bread breaking apart easily in her mouth. It was almost more of a mush.
Will you still answer my question?
Depends on how lame it is.
What body part do you feel that you are most like? He asked. Are you the hand, always busy doing work? Are you the mind, giving direction? Do you feel that you are more of a leg, perhaps, bearing up everyone else and rarely noticed?
Yeah, lame question.
No. It is of most importance. Each person, they are but a piece of something larger, some grand organism that makes up this city. This is the philosophy I am building, you see.
Lift eyed him. Great. Angry twig running an orphanage. Weird old man outside it. She dusted off her hands. If I'm anything, I'm a nose. 'Cause I'm filled with all kinds of weird crud, and you never know what's gonna fall out.
Interesting.
That wasn't meant to be helpful.
Yes, but it was honest, which is the cornerstone of a good philosophy.
Yeah, sure. Lift hopped off the stone benches. As fun as it was talking crazy stuff with you, I got somewhere important to be.
You do?
Windle asked, rising from where he'd been coiled up on the bench beside her. Yep, Lift said. I've got an appointment.